Before we commence, as usual, let's take a few moments to worship the Supreme One, the infinitely compassionate One, the Sublime One, the One who escaped the clutches of samsara and helped others do the same, the Supreme Buddha. And with this, let us also pledge our allegiance to walk on the path that the Buddha had shown. With this in mind, let us all take a moment to chant the Namaskara 3 times all together and with me.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa.
I was told that in a person's life, there are several places they should go before they die. One place is the elderly home, a nursing home. Another place is a hospital, usually a cancer hospital or a hospital with terminal ill patients. And number 3. And that's usually a mental asylum or a mental hospital. Now, I'd like to share a story which a monk had told me. And it's very interesting because it shows how much of a difference it can make. So, and when he was a layperson, he had a friend who had symptoms of being mentally with something wrong with his mentality. So the court had issued, go to this place and get checked up. So when the court issued this, unfortunately, himself had been out doing something out late, but because his friend had to go, he was like, okay, I'll go with you. And so he takes his friend to this mental asylum and was in a room. The room had several beds. However, it was pretty empty. And the doctor said there'll be a while before the checkup can be done. So he was very tired. So he told his friend, wake me up when the doctor comes. There are several beds here. I'm just going to lay down in one of those. So he lays down on one of these beds, and the patient sits on a chair waiting for the doctor. The doctor comes in and asks, which one is the patient? And the patient says, this one. Luckily for this person, an assistant comes in and says, wait. Because they're coming with injections. I think one of the tests, you have to be injected with something. And so the doctor was so... If that assistant was 2 minutes late, the wrong person would be checked up, and the wrong person might even probably be stuck in an asylum, in this mental ward. So, luckily for him, an assistant comes in and says, no, wait, wrong person. It's the one sat on the chair, not the one lying down. So they woke him up and said, okay, the doctor's checking your friend out, giving him a checkup. And luckily, he was safe. Now, a place with all these mental patients. We would normally think that this would be a place of absolute chaos. Because why one patient thinks that he is the king, another patient thinks that, well, I am a businessman. Another patient thinks that, you know, I am King Sakra, and these are all my servants. And so we think it should be chaos because people argue with each other. Well, these people are all mentally insane. So the name that they're given is usually mentally insane. And people in court can also pledge not guilty, reason, insanity. And it is very strange because we call them insane when they think they're absolutely normal. If I was to ask you, are you insane? You would say, no, I'm absolutely normal. So even if a person was in this mental asylum, they would say that, no, I'm normal. I'm completely normal. There's nothing wrong with me. I am the king. I am the queen. I am a policeman. I'm a doctor. I'm a nurse. I'm all these things. You calling me insane is the person who is insane. So they'll call the doctors themselves insane. Now, imagine living in a mental asylum where everyone around you is crazy and you yourself is crazy. Right? We all say, I can't remember who says this, but someone says, all people are insane. So imagine we're in a mental asylum, surrounded by people who are mentally insane. And let's imagine there's no doctors. Can a patient themselves cure themselves? Can a patient cure themselves? Find the cure for their insanity and become normal? What do you think the probability of that is? A patient, number one, understanding that they're insane. And then, searching for the answer, and not only that, finding the answer. What are the chances? I think you're more likely to be hit by lightning. You're more likely to be struck by lightning twice than for a person to understand by themselves that they themselves, there's something wrong, that I'm insane. And then search for the cure and then cure themselves. This is why the advent of a Buddha is so rare. Because a Buddha is exactly the same. Why? Because he comes into this world as a normal person. Right? For example, if we talk about the Buddha Gautama, he came into this world as a prince, thinking that I'm a prince. And his father thinking that I'm the king. And his cousins thinking that I'm a cousin, or his friend and charioteer Channa thinks that I'm his friend, I'm a charioteer, I'm so on and so forth. Living in this world, breathing in this world, and living and breathing in a world where he and other people around him are insane. Several years go by, and he realizes that something's wrong. And he searches for the answer. But under the Bodhi tree, he realizes that he's insane. He was insane. And the moment he realized that he was insane, he looked for the cure. And cured himself. That's why the advent of a Buddha is so rare. That's why they say between two Buddhas would be hundreds of thousands of countless eons. Because this is a rare chance. But the Buddha doesn't stop there. Sambuddha doesn't stop there. What do they do after that? They found out they're insane. Then they found the cure and they cure themselves. Because they know what they did, they go around and do what? Tell others. Excuse me, sir. Excuse me, madam. You're insane. And not only that, he proves it. He proves it to others and says that, oh, look, do you have these symptoms? Do you have symptom A, symptom B, symptom C? Yes, these are the same symptoms as the people who are insane. So does that not mean you're insane? Some people understand, but most people don't. And those who realize they're insane now look for what? The cure. They now search day in, day out, looking for the cure, which the Buddha says, here's the cure. And they take the medicine, cure themselves, and then what do? Cure others. You see, we are very fortunate to be in such a time where we are, where the cure for our own insanity is there. Because in this long, long, long timeline of samsara, the advent of a Buddhahood is so rare. But even when there's a Buddha, the event of where the Buddha's teaching is still in its purest form. So the cure is in its purest form. Now, that's very rare. Now, we all know that for us to have this opportunity, what must have we done? Merits, right? To be among all these great associations, these noble associations, we must have done what? Lots and lots of merits. See, merits are the universal currency. Meaning, wherever you go in this universe, right? So, currency changes from place to place. You're in Sri Lanka, you have to pay in rupees. You go to Australia, you pay in dollars. You go to the UK, you pay in pounds. You go anywhere, the currency will change. So if you went to, say, the UK with rupees, they'll be like, no. Change this to pounds and then we'll see. But there's one currency that is universal. So no matter where you go. You go to Mars and talk with the Martians. They have their own currency. But our merits, the currency of merits, is still applicable. It is still usable. Because merits are the universal currency and it's what changes the way we do things. It's what molds the way molds our life, molds the way we think. The modes of the way that we act and what takes us to our destination. In other words, takes us where? To Nibbana. Or it can take you where? Into the heavenly planes. Or it can take you where? To wherever your good karmas, your merits will take you. So one of the best things merits can do is what? The Buddha comes into this world. Well, he arises in this world, preaches the Dhamma, and then other people, his disciples, understand the Dhamma, and they themselves start spreading it. So with the merits that we have acquired, what is the best thing merits can give you? What is the best thing merit can give you? The Buddha says that the entirety of his sasana is what? Kalyan mitras. So what is the best thing merit can give you? The association of kalyan mitras. Now, here's the thing. Me being next to a kalyan mitra, is that the association that he talks about? Is that the association? So for example, right? Say for example, some of you, you will become monks. Now you're surrounded by the Mahasangha. Others of you will become Anagarikas, Anagarikas. Now you're surrounded by noble association, right? So that's the noble association that the Buddha talks about, right? Yes, yes, yes. No. It isn't. It's a thing that we feel that, you know, association is being with someone. That it's being in the proximity, the close proximity with someone who has noble association. That's what the Buddha is trying to talk about. That's what the Buddha is trying to say here. But it isn't. It reminds me of the analogy of, you know, I think the analogy is with a curry. Imagine you're making an amazing curry, right? Or amazing soup, or you're making something. Now, to mix all of this, what do you use? You use a spoon. The spoon is submerged in this curry. But can the spoon taste the curry? Can the spoon, the spoon is inside, right? Like it's covered all over in say this amazing curry or this amazing soup. But can the spoon taste it? Can the spoon taste how amazing your curries are? Can your spoons taste how amazing your curries are? No. Okay. You have the handle part. That doesn't go inside the curry. You submerge the entire spoon inside the curry. Now will the spoon taste the curry? Can it taste the curry? You leave it in there for a decade. Will it have tasted the curry? So being surrounded by noble association isn't noble association. Just like the spoon being surrounded by curry will never taste it. It's not being surrounded. Instead, a tongue. Now, normally when you cook, you do the taste testing, right? To check if there's enough salt or enough curry powder or whatnot, right? What do? You take that spoon, you put a small drop on your palm, and you taste it. Now, all you do is you take the smallest drop. And now, you can taste the curry. You can taste how much salt it has, how much turmeric powder it has, or how much sugar, salt, spice it has. And you can taste it with that one small drop. Agreed. That tongue doesn't need to be submerged like the spoon. Just imagine to cook and to taste food, you have to submerge your tongue. That means you have nothing else to do but to put your tongue into every dish you make. But luckily, all you have to do is just put a drop and you can taste it. So this is noble association. Noble association is about how much of you is submerged. Noble association is about who you are. Are you the spoon or are you the tongue? See, a person can be surrounded. Surrounds up, for example. Let's take the best example, right? Say, for some merit that you've done, you get to spend the rest of your life, right, on the right side of Guru Hamaru, on the left side of Amadas Nahamaru, behind Drongan Dhammaji Mahamaru, right, and onto your left and right, you've got all these great monks all around you. But let's say you're the spoon. On your left hand side, it's Guru Hamaru. Right? Forget all of these others, right? Guru Hamaru. So a person that we know who does so many great sermons, who preached Dhamma so well in a very practical way, right next to you. But if you're the spoon, does it matter if he's right next to you? Or does it matter if he's like 3 kilometers away from you? See, it doesn't matter how close. It matters whether you're the spoon or you're the tongue. And what we really, but more that a lot of people have this idea that, you know, to attain Nibbana, which means it almost feels as though, you know, to attain Nibbana, what I have to do is isolate myself. So many people here. I'm going to go to somewhere, say, for example, under a tree and be by myself. All by myself. I'm not going to trouble anyone. I'm going to be all by myself. Now, that's an idea that we all have, that, you know, isolation is what we need. So either we submerge or we isolate. We think, you know, being isolated by myself, this is what I need. You know, when I'm with other people, I start talking, I see their mistakes, they see my mistakes. So, you know, if I was all by myself, that's what I need to do. However, well, this is exactly what people like to be by ourselves, relaxed. See, everyone is every person who works is waiting to do what? To retire. Everyone who works is waiting to retire. Why? So finally, with whatever money I have, I can sit back, relax, sit outside, reading a book, reading a newspaper, right? Sleep when I want to sleep, eat when I want to eat. See, retiring is what I want. So people work 50, 60, I don't know, what age do we retire? 60? And so they wait until the age of 60 to finally say, you know what, I've done it, I'm going to sleep. Right? Well, I'm going to retire. Stay away from everyone and stay away from everything and relax. Because we like this idea that, you know, it's relaxed. I'm by myself, relaxed. And we take this idea and we take it to Nibbana as well. And we say, you know what? I want to be relaxed. Right? I want to be isolated from others. I don't want to trouble anyone. And I don't want other people to trouble me. I just want to stay back and be by myself. Meditating or doing what I want to be doing. However, this is not. That's not the way to Nibbana. So whether you submerge yourself or whether you isolate yourself, that is neither the association that the Buddha talks about. That is neither the association that the Buddha talks about. Now the question is, why? Why do we need noble association? What is the purpose of noble association? See, now we all have the understanding that, you know, the way that this is a mind. The mind arises and passes away due to the causes. Due to the environment, the mind arises and passes away. So if we were to give the mind the environment of a monastery, that's a noble association, right? Is it? If we were to take the mind and put it into a monastery, put it into a temple, put it, you know, sit it right next to a monk or right next to the Buddha, that is noble association, right? It isn't. See, what we have to do, what noble association is, it is the... See, you can be a noble association to number one, yourself. One mind can always be a noble association to another mind. That can be this mind and that mind, or this mind and this mind. What I mean is, noble association can come in two ways. It can come, this mind can have the association of another person. Or it can have the association of the next mind. So that's why, you know how sometimes you, when you're out and about, you do something. Right? Say, for example, you're at home and say someone finds out that, you know, you really like eating chocolate cake. And so they give you some chocolate cake. Like you have that in your house. You just it's a Monday or a Tuesday. So for the Srila Sharikas, you don't have a program at the monastery. You're at home. Therefore, you're at home by yourself or maybe with other people, and you had lunch. After a while, you start feeling, you know that uncle. That uncle had given me cake. See, sometimes your own mind tricks itself. So it's like, you know, if that uncle comes again and sees the cake, what will he think of me? He'll think, you know, like, I don't care, right? So I should get rid, I should, you know, you don't throw away food, because throwing away food is bad. Eh? You don't throw away food. We come on, it's okay. I'll have that cake. And so you have the cake, and then later on you think, oh, why did I eat that cake? Why did I eat the cake? And now you're giving association to yourself. And so you're giving yourself noble association. And so you're saying, you know, what you did was, what happened there was wrong, because and now you go into contemplation and you realize, oh, this is because of my vexation and da 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 da. Or you can have noble association with someone else. So, for example, you're at the monastery. Somehow, for some reason, you have brought a cake with you. After lunch, you feel a bit nibbly, you know, you feel a bit, that small bit of hunger. And therefore, you think, you know, I'm going to have some cake. But you're surrounded by eagle eyes. They see this. And they go, excuse me, Mahatmya. You don't care. Can I ask you something? Because I'll tell you the qualities of a Kalyan Mitra in a bit. But so you go, excuse me, can I tell you something? Why are you eating this cake? And so another mind can give the other mind noble association. Now you can say, well, if one mind can give association to itself, then what is the purpose of me being amongst all these great people? For one mind to give association to another mind, there has to be something that triggers that idea. In other words, for a mind to be triggered, what does it need? A sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, or thought. In other words, it needs vipaka. So, which means that there has to be some merit there that is taken from yourself. And so you are over here, what you're doing is you're trying to use your own merit to help yourself. Sometimes this may happen after, you know, a couple of hours. Sometimes it will happen like instantly. You eat the cake and you regret it. And you think, I shouldn't have eaten the cake, and then now you go into contemplation. Sometimes it will happen maybe hours after. Hours after you think, ah, wait, I had a cake, right? That was wrong with me. And now you start contemplating. Or it can happen days after, weeks after, months after, who knows, even years after, if you still think of the cake that you ate last year. And so you think that, oh, I shouldn't have done that, and da 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 da. And you're giving yourself association. But here, you are drawing from your karma, your vipaka. But when you're with the association of someone else, now, you're not just drawing from your own vipaka here, you're drawing from both. Why? Because now, when this mind tells the other mind that, you know, what you're doing, it's trying to help you, it is also using its own karma. So, one mind, if you... One person could be by himself, be by herself. And so, it can only use its own karma, his or her own karma. Right? So, I don't know, what shape should we karma? Vipaka. Can only use his own vipaka for his own journey. Now, if in the association, if they were in the association of someone else, This person also has his own vipaka. Now when he makes a mistake, he or she makes a mistake, when they make a mistake, this person sees and tells. Now just instead of this person just using this, they're using both of these. So we know we need merits to attain Nibbana. Is it only my merits that can help me attain Nibbana? Is it only my merits that's going to help me attain Nibbana? Can't your merits do the same? Can't your merits help me? Because each and every one of you have your own vipaka, have your own merits. So it's almost like, imagine having a bag full of beads. You have black beads and red beads. Because red is usually a sign of danger, we'll say these are bad. And black will be because the opposite. We only have black and blue. Red and black. We'll say black is good karma. So if we have a bag full of, you know, black and red beads. Now for us to pick, or say, every thought we pick a bead. Now we have a chance of picking either one of these. But when we have another person's karma in place as well. Now, according to your environment, according to, say this is a Kalyan Mitra. So Kalyan Mitra is a noble association, a noble friend. Now, you're able to use their vipaka as well. So, This is selfishly not selfish. This is selfishly not selfish. Why? Because you're using their thing. You're using their karma. But you're not selfish because they're using yours as well. Now you've combined your vipaka together. For example, let's say we are all going to decide. Say we're planning something. Say we're planning. So next day, say, example, so no one get excited. So say next Dakineyo, the English listeners are going to plan it out. Let's say I myself plan. Now my plan will be entirely to do with my vipaka. Right? So for example, I would say that, okay, you know, we should do this, we should do that, we should do this, and we should do that. But let's say person A and person B are both planning now. Now person A has ideas, person B has ideas. Some of the ideas that person A has isn't suitable. Because why? Does everyone think perfectly? Oh wait, let's just use a better word. Does everyone think in the best? Does everyone have the best ideas? No, sometimes our ideas may not be the perfect one, may not be the best one. And so person A would say that, okay, I have the idea that, you know, we should say, for example, we should have a powder from, you know, from the Sanghavasa to the main hall. So we should have like one of those long carpets from the Sanghavasa to the main hall. Now the other one could say, or maybe, let's not do that, but building on the idea makes another idea. So now the vipaka is the result of these two. Now let's say there are, say, 30 of us in this room. Now 30 of our vipakas are now making one resultant force. 30 vipakas are making one resultant vipaka. And therefore, we can say the result vipaka is better than if one person was to plan. That's why in office meetings, why doesn't the boss just do the work or do the planning? Technically, they could. They could. But instead, they have a committee. One, you know, you have PRs, you have people who does the finance, you have designers, you have all these people who have different sets of knowledge and experience. And so when they come together and plan, now you get the best output than if just one of them was to plan. Because why? They're drawing from other vipakas. So if this person was to decide, you know what, if this person has the mindset of isolation, again, remember, this is a mindset. If you have the mindset of isolation or the mindset of being withdrawn from the being withdrawn, basically. Now, this person only has their own. Of course, we are salvation is only for us. Agreed. I'm the only one who can help my salvation. However, it's merits that help us our salvation. Who is merits? Merits. So we have to not submerge ourselves, but change ourselves from the spoon to the tongue. With whatever association we have, to become a tongue, to become someone who can taste, who can use this association. Because merits, if you think about it like currency, merits is like money. You can have, say, trillions and trillions, right? Or billions and billions of rupees in your bank account. But does that make you rich? Does that make you wealthy? Normally, we say, you know, the amount of money in my bank account is equal to how much wealth I have or how rich I am. That's the normal mindset of people. That's why people work so hard just to say, you know what, I have a billion in my bank account. But instead, wealth isn't about how much you have. It's about what? How much of this have you used? For example, let's say you have enough money to buy the moon. You have enough money to buy the moon. But the moon is not for sale. Now, what's the point of having all that money? You have all this money, but suddenly there's a drought. Can you drink money? So what's the point of having billions in your bank account? Is it about how much money you have that makes you wealthy, that makes you rich? It's about how much money that you use. So you can say then, I can accumulate a lot of merits. And I have a bank full of good merits. And, you know, I was talking to a group of children the other day, and I was saying that, you know, by doing merits, or listening to sermons requires merits. So there's a really small kid, and then they're like, well, then if we don't listen to sermons, then we can keep our merits, right? Yeah, technically, yes. But then what's the point of having merits in the first place? It's like having billions in your bank account, but not using it. You have billions in your bank account, but when you pass away, none of that, you take that with you. Not a single cent, not a single dime, not a single rupee do you take with you. So what's the point? So, the association is basically you're using both of your vipaka to take both of you ahead. To take you both on the journey. Now, how do you turn from a spoon to a tongue? How do you turn from a spoon to a tongue? What do you have to do to change from the spoon to the tongue? See, what we have to do is simply change our mindset. All we have to do is simply change the way we see others. For example, let's say we see this person. So this is person B. We see this person B, and we see that person B is a very, Person B, they are very harsh words. They have lots of harsh words. Whenever they open their mouth, they say something and it hurts my feelings. Or let's say person B, every time around 2 o'clock goes missing. Right? Why? Because they go behind the kitchen and they have the chocolate cake that they're storing in their bag. Now all you can see, now all you are seeing is what? The bad qualities of person B. Now, can either of you have noble association? Now, would you go to person B and want to either help or get help from person B? You would, so. If we realize that person B isn't always good, and you know they have some bad qualities with them, we have this feeling that, you know, if they say something, if they give you advice, The first thing we think of is, well, you can give me advice. However, I saw you yesterday. You went behind that kitchen and you were stuffing yourself a chocolate cake. And you may not tell them that because we are all nice people. We don't tell other people. But we think that. And therefore, whatever they say, it's blocked. We create a barrier that says, well, I'm not going to take anything from them. And then you say, you know what? You start distancing yourself from them. You start distancing yourself from them and you think, no. Now, whatever advice person B gives you, do you take it? No. You see, the way you become a tongue is by understanding that, you know, person B may have bad qualities, but look at all the good that they do. Person B, every single morning, comes up to me and says, Teruvan Sunday. Person B, every single day, I see he or she goes to his or her teacher and talks to their teacher. Person B has all these good qualities. Now, even though, what we have to realize is, even though person B has these bad qualities, person AB is a good person. Person B is filled with so many good qualities. Therefore, you now start to accept. You start to think that, okay, person B is giving me advice. I should listen to it. See, the mindset that we should have as people who aspire to attain Nibbana is, may all those people who have virtues and who has great qualities, may they proceed onto the top of my head. May they proceed onto the top of my head. Right here. Which means what? No matter who the person is, whether if they have made the aspiration that, you know what, I want to attain Nibbana. If they say, you know what, I am observing the five precepts so I can attain Nibbana. Put them onto the top of your head. Look at them like they, because they are doing something exceptional. On the journey to Nibbana, they are doing something absolutely exceptional. They are doing what? They are going on the path to Nibbana. Now, whatever they do, whatever person B does, because noble association is you saying that, you know, you receiving some sort of advice from another person, from another being, from anyone, from your own self. You're receiving advice from yourself. That's a noble association. So, to receive association from person B, you need to have the mindset of, please, please, venerable sir, please, dear Mahatya, dear sir, dear madam, help me. We need to be able to lower ourselves below every single person here. To be at the feet of every single person here. Now the question is, can you? Now, of course, we can all say that. We can all say, oh yes, of course, you know, I can be at the feet of anyone. Saying is one thing. Doing, now that's the challenge. Staying at the feet of these people. So say, one day, say a serial killer comes up, right? They come to the monastery. They have been clean for the last 5 years, but they've been branded as, you know, this person is a serial killer. And they come and say, you know, I'm observing the five precepts. I want to attain my salvation, so I'm observing the five precepts. you should be able to keep them on your heads. Oh, but he's a serial killer. He's murdered 300 and so people and has done so much bad stuff, right? This, he's got done that, he's done this and that. But when he says, you know, I'm observing the five precepts, please, sir, come sit. Tell me. And you keep them on top of your head. That is the mindset of who? Venerable Sariputta. The great elder Sariputta. In various sermons, he said, you know, I'm like a carpet. Let anyone tread on me. Let anyone tread on me. Whether, because when you're a carpet, do you choose who you tread on, who treads on you? Do you say, you know, these people tread, these people don't tread? These people wipe your feet on me, these people, no. You know, carpets, right? Do only people come and wipe their feet on carpets? Cats, dogs, monkeys, cows, I don't know. Any sort of animal that can have that, even birds, they can come down and wipe their feet on a carpet. But does a carpet say, no, birds, no, you have wings, you should fly inside. No, they are accepting, they are willing to accept anyone. So think about the mindset that the Venerable Sariputta had, the great and venerable, the great Arhat, the great elder Sariputta had. Anyone who has made the aspiration, who has any sort of quality, any sort of virtue, may they stay, may they come on top of my head. You see, even Guru Ram is like this. Your teachers are like this. Guru Ram several times has said, you know, I can go up to, he said to, in sermons that he does to the monks and Anagariks and Agarikas, that I can go up to each and every one of you and wholeheartedly worship you. However, because I am Guru Ram and your teacher, and because of my higher nation, I'm not able to. But remember, I can worship each and every one of you. Whether you came, whether you've been here for the last 6-7 years, or whether you came just yesterday. Now just see, do you have that quality? Can you fall at the feet of anyone? Or do you have to choose? This person, you know, he's like this, she's like this, this. Oh, yeah, this person, okay. But these people, no. Because then when you see people like this, now you don't see, yes, you can see that B person makes a mistake. Say B person, let's say they have the habit of going behind the kitchen and eating, right, snacking. Now when they give you advice, you accept it because you realize that this person is on the journey to Nibbana. So I will take his or her advice. But when you see person B do something bad, so go around the back and have snacks, or, I don't know, speak to others in a very harsh way. Now you realize that this person, just like me, is on this journey. So, what can I do to help the person? What can I do to help this person? This could be me going to the person and saying, excuse me, sir, excuse me, madam, I don't think what you did was right. Or it could be not to say a single word. Or maybe next time, you stay behind the kitchen before they come. Why? Because when they come and they see you, they think, oh, I shouldn't be doing this, and leave. And they leave. See, this is noble association. So, what is the quality of a person of a noble person, of a Kalyan Mitra? What is a quality that they have? See, a quality of a Kalyan Mitra is they are able to help anyone with no bias, without thinking, should I help them or should I not? They are able to help anyone. If someone comes up to them and say they admit a mistake, so they say, you know, yesterday I did something wrong. Yesterday, when I shouldn't have, I shouldn't have said this to this person, but I did, and now they're upset with me. Now, a quality of a Kalyan Mitra is that they won't go around telling others, you know what, this person did this, right? She got really angry and said something really harsh to another person. A Kalyan Mitra will never go around telling other people's mistakes. Instead, they'll take it, and then they will try and help the other person. Now, that's not saying if a mistake happens not to tell someone else. Like, maybe that's the responsibility that you have. So, as a Kalyan Mitra, maybe you have to go and tell that teacher. So, for example, this person said this to this person, and you tell that teacher, but they won't go around and spreading it like gossip. Because normal people, so that's everyone but yourselves, right? Everyone but yourselves. Normal people love gossiping. Love telling someone something about someone else. Because why? What does it do? It makes them feel what? They did this, but I don't do that. So it makes them feel what? Good about themselves by putting someone else down. See, a Kalyan Mitra would never push someone else down, but instead, always pull them up. No matter what mistake they do, no matter what mistake they make, they'll never push another person down. They did something completely wrong that shouldn't have been done. Still, they'll never push the person down and say, you know, why did you do this, da, 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 and push them down. Instead, they'll think, what can I do to help the person? How can I pull, because remember, this is a person who has made the aspiration to do what? To attain Nibbana. What can I do to help him or her achieve what they want to achieve? Do I tell them something? Do I do something? Do I tell that teacher? Or maybe it's a small mistake, so you don't tell that teacher, but you say, you know what you did there was wrong. I want to tell you a story, or not a story, something that happened to me a long, long time ago. And that changed the way that I thought about other people, and also that changed the way I helped other people as well. So one day, I think I said something to someone that hurt someone else's feelings. Right? You know, it happens. And I sincerely didn't know. And one of our monks came up to me and said, you know, Nasandra, you said this, and I think it hurt the other person's feelings. Now, normally we have this feeling that, you know, to become defensive, you know, whatever you do to defend yourself, you're like, oh yeah, I did this because, you know, and I remember very clearly that he was like, "Hey, my bell, you may have done that, but I still think what you did there was wrong. I mean, what like he even though I was defensive, even though I you know I said something completely out of the that I try to defend myself in a certain way, because why? Thanks to jati, what do we do? Self-protection. Because of jati, self-protection. Oh, I did this because, you know, I have all, I did this because of this and this and this and this and this. I remember some people, if they make a small mistake and you tell them that this is the mistake you did, they somehow pull out an entire list of why they did what they did and how what they did is right. Not accepting what the advice. And I remember like when I did that, right? I said, you know, I did this because of this reason. He puts his hands together and says, "In my opinion, you may have done it like this. However," and that made me think, "Ah, I'm wrong here. I shouldn't have said that." Like, if I became defensive and he was like, "Oh, okay. Because normally we have this idea, if someone makes a mistake and they defend themselves, okay, you did what you did, and you try to escape the situation. That's our normal reaction. But because he said, yeah, he put his hands together in the most calmest of manners, said, "Yes, I know. However," that hit home. Hard. And I thought, you know, whenever you give advice to someone, never try to push them down. Instead, pull them up. Whatever they've done, no matter how bad what they did, whatever they've done is not to push them down. Now, you can say, though, sometimes you're going to have to. Sometimes the best thing to do is to push someone down. But you're not pushing them down to make you feel higher. You're pushing them down so they realize, "Huh, I've done something terrible here." But you don't stop there. You push them down so you can pull them back up. That is who a Kalyan Mitra is. Someone who thinks entirely about themselves and no one else. No. Someone who thinks entirely about the other. What more can I do for the other? How can I help this other person realize their mistake? How can I see, how can I show them that they're doing, that what they've done is wrong? If I tell it to this person in this sort of way, will they take it okay? Or if someone else said it, will they take it another way? Entirely for you. They work not, you know, they work with you. To you, for you to solve your problem. Not to give you advice and leave. Because that's what we normally do, right? Normally, if someone tells us something, gives you a problem, all you do is you say, you know, it's very easy. You do this, you do this, you do this, and you... At school, that's what you do, right? You do a problem, right? The teacher gives you the answer and says, "This is the answer. If you got your question wrong, look where you went wrong." And but the best teachers, what do? They'll say, okay, so for example, you say, "What's the question?" Now, normally the teacher will say, "Oh, that's wrong. The answer should be X, Y, and Z." But the best teachers will say what? "Your question is wrong. Your answer is wrong. Your answer is wrong. Let's work together to find out what the true answer is." And they'll say, you know, using, you know, they'll say, you know, "This is this, this is that, this is this." So the answer should be? Thank you. And they work with you to get the answer. Not just to give you advice and say, you know, it's not 21, use BOD mass and you should get 15. Or use BID mass and you should get 15. This may have triggered like childhood memories, but... bit mess. But they all work with you. That's who a Kalyan Mitra is, a noble friend, a noble association. They work with you for the problem. Now see, are you a Kalyan Mitra to someone else? Because remember, what you give is what you get. I remember one of our monks, he gave me one of the best advice that to this very day I still do. And the advice was, every single day, like at the end of your day, make the determination, may I be a Kalyan Mitra to someone else, so someone else can be a Kalyan Mitra to me. So may I help the other person, so may they help me. See, this mindset can only be found where? In the Sambuddhasasana. Tell me where else? Normally a friendship is what? I scratch your back, you scratch mine. You better scratch mine or else I'm not going to talk to you. You better give me what I want or I'm not going to talk to you. You better do this for me or else this association won't work. But for a Kalyan Mitra, does that have to happen? Do you have to continuously give something to the Kalyan Mitra, give something to your teachers for them to be your teacher? Like every single day when you go and to your Guru Hamwas, your teachers' meetings with your teachers, do you go and say, Abhihamdulillah, okay, I'll give you, I don't know, a packet of soap, but you have to give me a Guru Hamwa. Do you trade a Guru Hamwa for items? If you don't listen to your Guru Hamwa, what does your teacher do? If you were to completely say, you listen on the spot, but afterwards you just completely ignore what the teacher says, what would your teacher do? Go away, you don't listen to what I say. Is that what your teacher does? No. Next week, they find another way to tell you the same thing. They'll say the exact same thing, but in another way. That week again, you don't listen. What do they do? Next week, same thing. For the rest of your life, you just don't listen, right? There'll be a point where the teacher may think that, you know, maybe if someone else was to give advice, maybe the person will now accept it. So maybe they'll go and say, you know, to go to their teacher and say, I've been telling this person this advice, and I've been telling them several things, and they aren't doing what should be done. Maybe I'm the problem here. Maybe if we can change my student. But even when they change, do you think that teacher would not keep an eye on you? Do you not think that teacher would not keep an eye on you? Trust me. From experience, I can tell you. Once a teacher, always a teacher. Once a Kalyan Mitra, always a Kalyan Mitra. They will continuously keep an eye out. Even though you may not be on speaking terms, right? Because you don't like them person, so you say, no, I don't want to talk to you. Once a Kalyan Mitra, always a Kalyan Mitra. See, think about it. Do you have this sort of mindset? Do you have the mindset of a Kalyan Mitra? Do you give other people the do you give noble association to other people? Or do you just accept other people do it for you? See, when someone makes a mistake, don't go and shame them. Don't go and say, there's a stain on your clothes. And don't go and shame them. Instead, you go, should we go to the, you have a small stain, should we go and then clean up? And you go with them. Because now what do they feel? they are on my side. You see, a kalyan mitra will always vary. What they do will always vary. From person to person, they have their different ways of doing things. And why? We are all unique. But one thing is in common. What's that? The compassion. Compassion will always be common. From person to person, from whoever, from whatever, compassion will be the same. All of them will have the same amount of compassion towards everyone. That's why to be a kalyan mitra isn't easy. To give kalyan mitraness or give noble association and to actually receive it truly isn't easy. So when the Buddha said, you know, Mahanini, oh no, Ananda, the entirety of the Buddha Sasana rests on the shoulders of kalyan mitra. Was he wrong? He can't be. So here's the thing. I try to think, am I a kalyan mitra to someone else? How can I be a kalyan mitra? Do I have the idea that may all these people with these qualities and these virtues come and rest on top of my head? Do we have that quality with us? If you do, your journey to Nibbana will accelerate. Will become faster and faster. Exponentially, you'll accelerate. Because why now? Other people become, every single person around you becomes what? A kalyan mitra. Every single person around you becomes what? A kalyan mitra. And you become a kalyan mitra to everyone around you. No matter who, no matter what, no matter. So, I want you to, throughout this week, I want you to try to have this mindset, get yourself to have this mindset, and try to become a kalyan mitra to yourself, and take the quality to make yourself acceptable, to accept noble association. Make yourself almost emit your noble association, and also to accept noble association. Because remember, it is this noble association that will take us to our destination. So we're sharing each other's merits. For example, right, the best example I can give you about sharing these merits is, I don't come here and think, you know what, I'm going to talk about this and this and this and this. But using all of your merits, this is what comes up. Now, who's the first person to listen to all this? You have no idea how fortunate I am to be able to listen to the words that come out of my, to use your merits to help me. So that's why. Selfishly, unselfish. Because now every word that comes out of here, I'm asking myself. Okay? Do you do this? Because I'm no hypocrite. I don't want to be a hypocrite. I don't want to say one thing and do something else. I say what I do and I do what I say. So I ask myself, do I have this? If I feel that I don't have this 100%, now I've said it. So what? I have to do it 100%. So here's the thing. I'm able to use your merits and my own to give the resultant vipaka, to benefit all of you. So the thing, this is using almost others' vipaka to help yourself. But in the end, you're helping them as well. So, selfishly, unselfish. This week, I was thinking about the ear. you know, the ear that we use, and how amazing your ears are. Because we always feel that, you know, thanks to what? Jati. We always feel that, you know, you are hearing the words that are coming out of my mouth. You're hearing what I'm saying. We feel that, you know, that something from my mouth is coming into your ear and you are processing what I'm saying. And we have this, again, thanks to Jati, we have this amazing story. Right? Jati, the best storyteller there is. We have this amazing story that the words that come out of my mouth, it's like something is coming out of here, coming into this mic, and coming out bigger in the speakers, and getting it going to your ears, and you trying to understand what I'm trying to say. But the thing is, our ears are so... Right now, you can hear my voice. Agreed. But then also, can't you hear the AC? Can't you also hear the wind, maybe someone talking in the background? Some noise here and some noise there. Do you hear them all individually? Do you hear them all individually? Does your ears pick these up individually? So do they hear one moment, does your ears hear a voice, another moment does they hear the AC, the aircon, or in another moment does it hear, I don't know, birds? Is that how it happens? Or does your ears pick up the resultant vibration of the resultant... See, I mean, for now I'm going to use sound wave for now. Resultant sound wave. Let me give you a good example. Okay, so if I was to get these two pens and hit them together, do you hear them separately? Oh no. Does your ears hear them, or does your ears sense them separately or as one? Does your ears pick them up as separate or as one? All right, one more time, right? I'm going to try to get them simultaneously. As one. So, if I was to tap this, and the sound of the AC, they all come to your ears as one. Because your ears don't... We all know our ears have that, you know, eardrum that vibrates. It doesn't vibrate separately to everything else. So it won't be, no, a part won't vibrate to a voice, another part won't vibrate to the aircon, the other won't vibrate to the birds. Instead, they all vibrate together. So what you are hearing is just one massive sound. So what is a sound? What is a sound? Well, we say, you know, sound is what you're hearing, right? So, if I asked, what am I producing here? Well, vibration, yes. You can say it's a vibration, but is the air vibrating? You see, all that is happening here is that we feel that there's something from my mouth that is going somewhere, that is hitting your ears, and there's something that's traveling. That's why we love saying, you know, it's a sound wave. We love saying that. Because why? It gives us such a fixed feeling. You know, it's a sound wave, you know, there's a wave that goes, that is emitted, and you are now hearing a sound wave. Beautiful. Right? It's amazing, we can hear it. But when it comes to the actual, like, the nitty-gritty part of it, there is nothing that's coming out of my mouth that's actually entering your ears. Best way to say this is, the things that are coming out of my mouth probably stop at that chair. But yeah, you're hearing because of the speakers. Agree? Because if we asked what a sound wave is, there is no wave there. A wave is what, so it's how we visualize or how we measure sound. Because if we looked at what sound truly is, like we say, it's a vibration. So if we were to take two pens and hit them together. You can't hear that. I hit the pen on the table. Right. What is happening here is, when two things make contact, so these two pens make contact, what it does is, it just shoots out whatever was in between outside. Now, whatever was here gets hit this way. But we know when things are further apart, what does it make here? It makes a low pressure. So what happens to this particle here? It comes back. Then this one, after it goes back, again, low pressure here. So this comes back. Wait, so the next particle that goes, comes back. The next particle that goes, comes back. So when it enters your... ear, which particle went to your ear and vibrated your ear? Can you say that? Was there anything that traveled from the pen to your ear? All that happened is there was a high pressure, low pressure, high pressure, low pressure, high pressure, low pressure, high pressure, low pressure. And that's what goes and enters your ear. And because of the pressure difference, your eardrum vibrates. So, let me explain this. This is a science lesson now. Take it to be... Have you all seen Newton's cradle? Newton's cradle. You know, that amazing, I think it's a toy, where you have like the balls in a row and they're all connected. You take one, you swing it, and it goes and it flies out the other end. And that comes back and flies this way. In a perfect environment, this is supposed to go on forever, thanks to the conservation of energy. Now, with sound, it happens the same way. Because when you hit something together, what you're doing is you're just giving energy here. This ball comes and collides with this other one. But when it collides, now there's an empty space here, which creates a vacuum, bringing it back. This, because of these strings, comes back. But in sound, there's no strings. So it comes back. This gets energy and hits the next one. And then again, because of the decrease of stuff, low pressure. And when these two things come together, you have high pressure, low pressure. So we say this is high pressure and this is low pressure. So everything will come back. But when we look at it as a whole, we see that, oh, there's a pressure difference that goes through this, that goes and hits your ear and then vibrates the ear and then you hear a sound. But was there anything that was moving? Is there anything that was that came from this that's coming to your ears right now? Nothing. Not a single thing here is entering your ears. Instead, a pressure difference makes this sound go all the way from the object to your ears. Now, wouldn't it be very, very silly to say that, you know? If I was to drop this pen and it was to fall on the floor, I did that. It's because of me did the pen fall on the floor. That's me. It fell because of me. The pen fell because of me. Isn't that very silly to say? Because it's not because of me. All I did was I let go of the pen. The actual bringing the pen to the table is due to gravity. So I can take... can I take ownership of gravity? Well, then if you drop a pen, it shouldn't work, right? Because it's my gravity. However, we take ownership of what? Of this. When we hit two things together, it is me doing this. So this is my sound. When it enters your ear, your hearing, my sound. Don't you think your hearing, when you speak, don't you think you're giving out your, this is your voice? That, don't you think that this is my voice here? That my voice is what you are hearing. It's almost like taking ownership of gravity here. Gravity isn't under our control, right? And it's not dropping because I want to drop. Instead, it's dropping because of gravity. Same with sound. What you are doing is what you are compressing air through a small hole. And when it comes out, it starts to vibrate, it starts to make this pressure difference, and therefore it travels and hits your ears. But yet I say, you know, this is my voice. If something happens to my voice, I don't want that to happen. Right? My voice is too low, my voice is too high, my voice is too scratchy, my voice is too this, my voice is too that. But yet it's not your voice to take ownership in. Is it? Do you own the air? The air that goes inside of me, of course, is mine, right? The air that goes through me when I breathe is my air, right? The air that comes out of me is my air, right? The things that people say, God. So this is my air that's coming in, that's my air that's coming out. This is like your breath stinks, my breath it smells of mints or whatnot. Where did this come from? Why are you saying it's yours when it's all that you're doing is creating? All that's happening when you say sound is you're just pulling air in and you're pushing air out. Again, are you pulling air in? Are you the one pulling, is your lungs like grabbing onto air, pulling them all in? Is that what your lungs are doing? No, all your lungs are doing is you're creating a low pressure, so you're taking air in. So you yourself isn't the one taking air in. You yourself aren't the one who's taking air out either. But yet you take ownership and you say, you know, I'm the one breathing. I can control my breath. I can control whether I'm breathing fast or breathing slow, but yet breathing itself isn't something that we control. So you create a low pressure, air goes in and fuels this goes from high pressure to low pressure, filling in the gap. Then it creates high pressure outside low pressure, therefore. Even when we say high pressure, low pressure, we give it a very, this is high pressure, this is low pressure, high pressure goes to low pressure. We give it a very, fixed feeling here as well. But even the creation of high pressure and low pressure. So, we're talking about the voice here now. Okay, my my drawing skills are amazing. So these are your lungs, right? And right. So when we talk about air pressure, we say, you know, when the diaphragm goes down, right, we have low pressure here, and then this becomes high pressure, right, and therefore it goes inside here. Who created the low pressure? Then if we created low pressure, who created the high pressure? The moment that, say, if we said that we created low pressure, high pressure has to be created as well then, right? But did anyone create high pressure? We can say, okay, we moved the diaphragm down, so we create the low pressure. The high pressure, who created it? Did anyone create high pressure? Did this pressure actually change? Did the pressure around the mouth actually change? No, except what? It is higher than the lungs. So the pressure difference is what takes breath in. The pressure difference is what makes breath come out. Let's turn this the other way. Here we have a box that has two skins that vibrate. Depending on the muscles there, it can stretch and it can relax, just like muscles can do. Air is pushed out, vibrates these two skins, and we hear hello. Even the word hello, right? I remember at school we used to have this contest of try to speak without moving your tongue. Right? Try to speak without moving your tongue. Like, even when you think about it and you try, your tongue moves. Even very slightly. Because why? The words that come out of my mouth are what? My words, right? I'm saying words, right? No, it's just that this pressure difference goes through this voice box and it alters, is altered by our mouth, our tongue, our nose, and whatnot. And it comes out as words. But thanks to Jati, we claim and we say this is my voice. This singer has such an amazing voice. They're like nightingales, right? What a beautiful voice they have, you know. I love hearing them sing, but yet they are not the ones who are singing. If we were say, okay, let's just take the ownership of what the body can do. Let's take ownership of what the body can do, right? So let's say we are the ones who are controlling the body for now. So we control the muscles. We control the diaphragm, the lungs, the muscles, and the voice box. But the voice? Is it the diaphragm? Is it the trachea, the tubing? Is it the voice box? It's all these coming together. So even if we hear someone's voice and it sounds amazing, that isn't what? That isn't theirs. That can't be theirs. Or else if it was theirs, that means the air has to be theirs, the pressure has to be theirs, everything has to be theirs. But can it be? So when you are hearing me speak, are you actually hearing me speak? When you are hearing me speak, are you actually hearing me speak? You're hearing combination of all this happen. And it goes through a mic, right, which has, like our ears, has a very thin skin that vibrates thanks to the pressure difference. Pressure difference and also its elasticity. It vibrates because of that, And that's picked up by these senses, and it goes through that, goes through a mixer, goes through the speaker. The speaker also has a thin skin that vibrates, and that sends this pressure difference through the air into your ears, and then you hear it and you say, oh, this is my voice. You're hearing my voice. These are my words. But are you? You see, Jati is the best storyteller. Jati will forever be the best storyteller. Why? You are all hearing my words. You are all hearing my voice. And I don't know, the speaker can only magnify what my voice. Right? So you're all hearing what this is my voice you're hearing from the speaker. Thanks to who? Jati, the storyteller. And so when something goes wrong with your voice, I don't know, you have phlegm or you have a sore throat and you can't talk properly, now you feel what? Vexed. You feel this massive amount of vexation build up inside of you. Because why? Your voice. People love, again, everyone but you. Right, everyone else in this world but you guys, they like hearing themselves speak. They say they don't. They say, you know, I don't like my voice, I don't like this. But they love hearing themselves. Not through speakers, not through a recording. Right, so if you were to record your voice and listen to it, normally people don't like hearing it. I don't know if you've ever had the experience, like you take a video of yourself saying something and then you hear it again and you think, that's not my voice. I sound terrible in this. My voice sounds better, right? And you go ask other people to confirm, and they say, just to make you feel better. Yeah, this isn't picked up. They're right, your voice is better than this, to make you feel better. Because you can't hear your own voice. Can you? Yeah, you can say, well, my voice I can hear. But the way other people hear it, the way you hear it, are different. You're hearing, other people are hearing it because of the air, the pressure difference, right? This movement of disturbance. Whereas, you hear it because of what? The voice goes around hitting walls and hitting things and coming back to your ears. And not only that, the vibration goes through your bones. So, the way you hear your own voice isn't the way that other people hear your voice. So which one is your voice? Normally, normally people think that they, like, that, you know what, I have a good voice or I have a bad voice. Again, good or bad, this is all to do with what? Perception. Your own perception. But yet you think this isn't my voice. How can you claim something that's not yours? But yet, thanks to who? Thanks to the storyteller. We claim, this is my voice. You see, well, we have to be very, even with sound even, because like I was saying, that everything right now is coming to you at once. But our brains and our mind gives it separate sounds. So you know that this is the sound of, Can you hear that? No? Well, you know the sound that this is a pen writing, or you know this is the sound of a pen dropping, you know the sound of someone speaking, you know the sound of a clock ticking. You can separate all these sounds and say that, you know, you hear separateness. You hear separate sounds. Now, you can say that, yes, that's because of our intelligence, because we've heard pens drop before. We've heard clocks tick before. So in this this large sound, we're able to separate the small sounds inside. But the ear can only pick up what? The loud sound. Maybe one day I'll show you an animation of how the ear works. I don't have it with me, but the ear is not just the ear, the entire body, but the ear itself is an amazing piece of invention. It's an absolutely amazing piece of invention. But yet we think that, you know what, this is me, I'm hearing this, this is my ear, I can choose whether I hear this or not. The next time you have earphones on, earphones when you listen to sermons, of course, right? When you listen to sermons on an earphone or on a phone or whatnot, try to realize where the sound is coming from. Because when you hear a sermon, or say you listen to a sermon, recorded sermon on some earphones, or let's say you're watching it on a screen, we automatically feel that the voice is coming from what? That mouth on the screen. Take a moment just to realize that, you know, the sound isn't coming from the mouth. The sound isn't coming from where? The speaker. The sound is coming from where? From the mind. Sound is a mental perception. Sound is a mental perception. It depends on who, where you are, your, I think it's called your hearing age. So, for example, young children can hear higher and lower pitches than you can. So, for example, it said that a human can hear 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz. But then that you can test your hearing. There's a certain test, I remember you can do some tests online. And that only children under the age of 5 can hear. Only children under the age of 10 can hear, 12, 15. I remember in school once, there was I can't remember what the app was called, but there's an app that can play a high frequency. So children, what they'll do is they'll play this and keep it somewhere. All the children will be like, "Oh, turn off the sound, turn off the sound." But the teachers will be like, they're looking around saying, like, "What's wrong? I can't hear anything. What are you saying? Turn off the sound. There's not, no sound playing." Because why? Their ears don't pick up what? Such high frequencies. But children, like, even with children, there'll be some children that do, some children that don't. As you grow older, your range, smaller, you become smaller. So you may before been able to listen to, say, 20,000 hertz, but now only 17,000 hertz. Because of your age. Age meaning, again, it's not age to blame here. We can't blame age. Why? It's not age to blame. It's what? Causes arise at that moment, gives rise to that effect. But thanks to Jati, we say what? I am now very old. Buddha, I'm very old. You have to speak a bit louder. You have to scream in my ear or else I can't hear. Because they start blaming age. Because why? I used to have good hearing. Now, I don't. I used to have good hearing. Now I don't. So whose fault is that? Yeah, it's aging. You know, these are, you know, Buddha, you should, you know, you have to do this before you age or else you won't be able to hear like I do. But in reality, causes effects. So again, so like when next time you listen to a sermon, a recorded sermon, but you put the earphones on, try to realize where this is all coming from. Where is sound coming from? Because when you realize the sound isn't coming from the screen, Or the mouth of the speaker, or not coming from the phone, not coming from the earphones. Instead, it's the mind. Now you take it, that gives you almost like a reality check. You know, you realize that the sound is coming from my mind. Just imagine, right? You see a group of people moving around crazily. What do you think? They're moving around like lunatics. What do you think? These poor people, maybe they have some sort of illness. They deserve, you know, we may want to get it checked out, maybe send them to this mental asylum, maybe. Right, just to check them out. But when you realize what is dancing? Moving to music, right? That's what dancing is. But where is music? In the mind. So they are dancing to their mind. In other words, just like a crazy person will move in a very crazy way, a person who's dancing is doing the same thing. See, now when you realize that sound is entirely mental, you can't listen to music the same way. Because it's not coming from the speaker, it's not coming from the singer, it's coming from what? The mind. So can you enjoy music the same way? I can't listen to my favorite songs again. Because why? They're not, you know, the singer is not singing, it's just my mind. You see, once you truly understand how this really works, you realize the unnatural nature of the world. You realize the cause and effect nature of the world. Everything around you is cause and effect. And you now no longer require what? That song to make yourself happy. You know, you don't require. So something happens, say someone's put a song on and sometime in the middle of the song it stops. You cannot be frustrated because why? The song wasn't out there. Song was where? Playing in. So what's the difference between you listening to a song and remembering a song? But yet you can say remembering a song is almost like it feels like a lower quality. But even when you remember a song and even when you listen to a song, they're both played where? In the mind. See, when it comes to sound, when it comes to the world, we have to keep on showing ourselves that, you know, it's anicca. Now you can ask the question, well, back in the time of the Buddha, right, they didn't know about the ears, they didn't know about the eardrum, the three bones, the cochlea, they didn't know about any of this. So how did they know about the anicca of sound? Did you need to know the anicca of sound to become an arahant? Do you? You need to know that the sound is anicca for you to become an arahant. So if I start like this, like, no. Do you think you need to understand that sound is anicca to become an arahant? We have like several yeses, several noes, and several no movement whatsoever. The actual answer is yes. You went to the venerable, the great Arhat Sariputta, and you go, "Venerable sir, is sound anicca?" Would he say, "Hold up 1 minute," and be thinking, "Yes, it's anicca"? Do you think that he'll be like that? No, he'll say, "Of course." Because he understands that the whole world is anicca. So a lot of people have asked me, so do we need to know that color is anicca? Like, you know, sai, there's no color here, that it's anicca. Like, to become an arahat, do you need to know that? Well, yes. Because why? You're proving what? The anicca nature of the world. So if you went to the venerable, Sunita Sopaka, right? And you ask them, Abhihan, right? Venerable sir, is kala anicca. Do you think they'll be like, wait, I have to ask my teacher? And be like, Abhihamdra, like, what is kala? And do you think they'll need to know that? They won't know where it comes from. But they know what? Kala is what? Anicca. They can say with 100% conviction, right? With 100% trust that it's anicca. If you ask them, in the eye, the we have the rods and cones, and they've got the optic nerve, they'll be like, they probably are, but I don't know about that. I don't know about these rods, these cones. I don't know what this optic nerve is. But I know that color is anicca. That color is a manifestation in the mind. Like they won't know about the eardrum, the cochlea, the drum, the bones, the brain, nothing. But they know one thing. Sound is a manifestation of the mind. See, now, we have to understand for Nibbana, we have to understand anicca. Anicca of what? Anicca of what? Of everything. So, it's not anicca of this, anicca of that, anicca of these flowers, anicca of this mic, none of that. You have to understand anicca. Anicca of what? Everything. So this doesn't mean you have to go around and say, these days that they are researching about quantum physics, so we have to find the anicca nature of quantum physics. So we're gonna have to do some research, and everyone now goes to the hadron colliders, and we're now experimenting to find the anicca nature of quantum quantum physics. You don't need to. All you have to do is understand what anicca. And that's enough. So, Sunita Sobhaga may not know about quantum physics, but they know what? The word is anicca. That sounds, smells, tastes, touch, thoughts are all anicca. Rupa Vedana Sanya Sankara Vijnana is? That's all they need to know. Because that is what? That is? That's the world. So, put anicca to use. Look at the world through this anicca nature. Take your storyteller, right? Tie the storyteller up and put him in a corner. And look in the world through anicca. Look at the world as it is. See the world as anicca. So whenever you're hearing something, try to see him. Why is this anicca? Do you remember in school, you had math questions that says, if x plus y plus da 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 equals this, prove y equals 4. Remember that? You had to prove these equations. If world, prove anicca. If world, prove anicca. So whatever you see, hear, smell, taste, touch, whatever's happening around you, prove what? Anicca. Prove that the entire world is what? A manifestation of causes. Causes coming together to give rise to an effect. Prove that everything is a manifestation. That's our duty. Because why? Because once we are attacking, because once we see the world to be anicca as manifestations, what are we attacking? Manifestation is the opposite of what? Fixed. Fixed is the opposite of what? Fixed and separate. Fixed and separate is what? Ignorance. Get rid of ignorance, get rid of attachment, get rid of attachments, get rid of vexation, get rid of vexation, get rid of the insanity mode, get rid of insanity mode, get rid of jati. Get rid of the storyteller. All we have to do is what? Get rid of storyteller. By understanding the reality of the world. Now, coming back to where we started. To practice anicca, to practice the nature's quality of anicca, what do you need? Me, myself, and I. Right? All you need is me, myself, and I. So, what is the point of having noble association? Right? See, for your practice, for Nibbana, noble association is key. Noble association is essential. You need it for your salvation. Right? So don't forget what we talk about in the beginning. Become a Kalyan Mitra to others by having the idea, may all people with virtues and values come on top of my head. Stay on top of my head. May I be at the feet of these great beings. May they tread all over me. Look at the greatness in others. So, remember, like, if you see something wrong with someone, a mistake someone does, don't go around telling it to others. Don't go around gossiping. Instead, I don't need to be telling you this. I know all of you know, but I want to reinforce this. Don't go around gossiping. Okay, so something's wrong with someone's clothes. Don't go and say to others, like, oh, did you see so-and-so's clothes? Like, this is too bad, this is too high, this is too low, this is too white, this is too black, this is too... No. Go to the person. If it's really wrong, go to the person and say that this is an issue. Like, how can we fix this? Now, how can you fix this? How can we fix this? Now you're working as a what? Team. Working as a team to solve who? Solve what problem? Whose problem? Solve problems. Remember, this can only be found in one place and one place alone. As in the Sambuddhasasana. Nowhere else will you find a person who is entirely dedicated to help who? Another person. Because remember, we live in a dog-eat-dog world. We're always trying to... In this world, the world is trying to always get for itself. Feed what? Feed who? Feed what? Feed the storyteller. Feed jati. Only in the Sambuddhasasana do you realize that jati, or the self, is a fallacy. So, let's go. Let me wholeheartedly help another person. Okay, so as your task for this week, right, instill this idea of having other people who are practicing or who are on the path, right, who have made the determination that they want to attain Nibbana. Keep them on your head. Keep that virtue and try to instill that virtue inside of us. And I can guarantee you, your journey to Nibbana will become faster. Okay. Let's take a few moments to transfer our merits and conclude today's session. Let's take a moment to transfer all the merits we've acquired by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, chanting Pirith, listening Dharma, and engaging in various meritorious these days, the first and foremost. Let's remind ourselves how incredibly fortunate we are to be in receipt of the Lord Buddha's teachings. And with immense gratitude, let's transfer the merits of the Bhikshu, Bhikshunis, Upasakas, Upasakas, who since time immemorial have protected and preserved the sublime teaching of the Buddha and passed it down to the generation of noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, to understand, to comprehend Dhamma. Resulting one chance remains to all our devotees, for all the members of the Mahasangha present throughout the world, including all Chief Priests of the chapters, who dedicate their lives to no path and commit themselves to betterment of all sentient beings. Let us not forget among them will be the monks and nuns visiting local temples and nunneries, who have always been by your side through thick and thin, coming or shining. Resulting one chance remains to Guru Sannyasi, as well as the monks present at the monastery, as well as the Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let's take one chance for man to express our gratitude to those who made great effort to disseminate the teaching of the Buddha, be that by transliterating sermons, sharing them out to others, inviting others to join them, may the power of merits. If anything born in the willful plane, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane, made by the power of merits, may they obtain the mentor's deeds, fulfill the mentor's deeds, fulfill the noble eightfold path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's all take more chance of merits that we've acquired to our devotees, friends of the monastery, who for sake of merits continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes every one of you who have provided the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes, medicines, as well as those who pass their know-how and their well wishes. May for the power of the merits, may they abstain from their meritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the noble path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's all take more chance of merits to our mothers, fathers, husbands and wives, brothers, sisters, sons, daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews, nieces, friends and acquaintances, employers, employees, and to our elders, and to all those who have helped us, supported us, assisted us in shape or form. By the power of these merits, may they be healed of physical and mental ailments, may they overcome any obstacles in their spiritual progress, may they abstain from their mentor's deeds, fulfill the mentor's deeds, fulfill the noble food path, and attain the supreme bliss in Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to the devas, brahmins, spirits, demons, primary and sakadeva, deva, as well as humans, gods and deities, who have committed to protect and fulfill the Dhamma of the Sasana. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to our garden deities, who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May the power of merits, may they prosper in divine power and wisdom, may they abstain from mentor's deeds, fulfill the mentor's deeds, fulfill the noble path, and attain supreme bliss in Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let's also take one chance of merits to our ancestors who have predeceased us, to all those who have been friends, families, acquaintances, in the infinitely long chain of samsara, and to all those who have helped us, support us, assist us in any shape or form. Let's take one chance of merits to all the members of the armed forces as well as the police force who have sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation. May all those who have lost lives in the war be their friend or foe. Rejoice in the merits required today. Let's also take a moment to transfer merits to all those who lost their lives in natural calamities such as tsunamis, earthquakes, landslides, pandemics, reminding ourselves among them will be those who have been friends of family to us in this infinitely long journey to samsara. May through all the power of the merits we've accumulated. May they abstain from the merits, if anything born in the willful plane, may they redeem themselves and be born in the blissful plane, made by the power of the merits, may they abstain from the mentor's deeds, fulfill the mentor's deeds, fulfill the wayward path, and attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, let's all resolve, may the power and the blessing of all the merits required throughout the day. We win and witness the event of many hundreds of thousands of Arhat nuances, Arhat main nuances, in this blessed land. And finally, may the power of all the merits required for the day, you and I and everyone who made this program a success, become our Arhat Nuvansi or our Arhat Main Nuvansi in this very life in the era of the Gautama Supreme Buddha itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Chipu Gem be with you all. The Mahasangha will now transfer the blessings to you.
Raga ginnin midetnva dvesha ginnin midetnva moha ginnin midetnva nibbhana parama sukhayin sukita taravetnva Nibbhāna parama sukhayin sukita taravetnvā mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbhāna parama sukhayin sukita taravetnvā Nibbhāna parama sukhayin සුකිත තරවෙත්වා නිම්භාන පරම සුකයෙන් සුකිත තරවෙත්වා රාගගිනි නිවේවා දේශගිනි නිවේවා මෝහගිනි නිවේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා නිවන් සැප ලැබේවා තුන්වන්ගේ සුසියනන්ද මහවනවලින් සීල ලෝක සීල සත්‍යෝම නිබ්බාන් ප්‍රමසකින් සුබතර වෙත්වා සාදු සාදු සාදු.